I know I don't have to tell you this, but this episode is only for educational purposes. It is not nutrition or personalized medical advice. We want you to get the most from the episode, but to keep that in mind as well. And we really hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the Quiet the Diet podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Shapiro. I am an integrative functional registered dietitian in New York City who has helped over 1,000 clients reverse their anxiety, approach their weight lovingly, and heal their digestive issues. I help clients to access liberating self-awareness through humor, compassion, and nuance. I lost 100 pounds the wrong way so that you don't have to. You know, without all the physical and psychological damage that comes along with it. Whole body health requires so much more than just going on a restrictive diet. The Quiet the Diet podcast offers a holistic look at what it takes to be your most vibrant, healthy self. I want to help you quiet the diet so you can focus on all the other parts of your amazing health and life. Welcome to the pod. I can't wait to explore the magic of functional nutrition and medicine together. After having gone through the Gupta program myself, I started to recommend this program to clients, friends, and family who were dealing with the exact conditions that this program is tremendously supported by. Because of that, I've become an affiliate for this program, and you can access your free 28-day trial to the Gupta program through that link in the show notes below. On today's episode of Quiet the Diet, we are exploring how our brains can influence chronic illness and how simple things like meditation might be essential for putting you on the path to healing or creating presence around healing or even reducing symptoms. But that for some people who have chronic recurring conditions, a specific type of limbic system retraining might be necessary. What ends up happening with a lot of chronic conditions, and when I'm speaking about chronic conditions, I am talking about ones that are involving our neurological, immune, and endocrine system. So a lot of these conditions that have been kind of cropping up recently, mast cell activation disorder, histamine intolerance, chronic fatigue syndrome, of course, COVID long haul too. A lot of these conditions that we're now starting to understand have this really neurological, nervous system facing component to them. The Gupta program is a brain retraining program, and it influences neuroplasticity, can induce mindfulness, and it's considered a holistic health program for those chronic conditions, including long COVID. It is very specifically a brain retraining program. On today's episode, we have the incredible founder of the Gupta program who's going to talk to us about how trauma, whether it be physical or mental, can then kind of avalanche into these chronic conditions and how simple things that you can do can really kind of reverse that process, which is so incredible. And our guest on the podcast today is that incredible founder, Ashok Gupta, and here's a little bit more about him. Ashok Gupta is an internationally renowned speaker, filmmaker, and health practitioner who has dedicated his life to supporting people through chronic illness and achieving their potential. Ashok suffered from ME, or chronic fatigue syndrome, around 25 years ago when he was studying at Cambridge University. Through neurological research that he conducted, he managed to get himself 100% better. He then set up a clinic to treat others and then published the well-known Neuroplasticity Limbic Retraining Recovery Program and app, known as the Gupta Program, in 2007. He has published several medical papers, including randomized controlled trials, showing that the treatment is effective and is continually researching these conditions. All the links to access Ashok's program, the Gupta program, are below. And you're going to learn about a special offer that he has now that's totally free and makes limbic retraining, presence, mindfulness, and healing really accessible. We are so excited to have the brilliant Ashok Gupta on the podcast today, and I can't wait for you to listen to this episode. I think just listening to it can be really healing. I am joyously here today with Ashok Gupta, who is the creator of the Gupta program, and I want to pick your brain about so many different things. And I will say that in my years of being a practitioner, I've weaved in what I thought to be like scientifically backed but unexplainable tactics that I use with my clients. And I find that your program really pulls together this model of kind of the practice of healing and what that looks like. And it really, you know, you could not have come and had this program created at a better time, because I know a lot of the work that you're doing now also involves COVID long haulers. So I want to talk about that. So just thank you to start with. And I'm so happy to have you here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be invited. So thank you.
Absolutely. So I think your personal story is specifically compelling. And I, of course, want to hear about how you created the Gupta program and how you really differ from, I think, any other program in this arena when it comes to chronic illness. So first, Ashok, can you just tell us a little bit about kind of your healing journey and what brought you to create the program in the first place?
Yes, of course. Like many of us who have actually been on this healing journey, it's from our own experience. So I went through at university. You know, I was living my life, enjoying university, and then suddenly I got a virus. And that virus was like a brick wall in front of a young man who couldn't then move forward with his life. And I'd go from doctor to doctor and they'd say, we don't know what's causing it. We have no cure for it. You're on your own, essentially. And that started a lifelong quest to try and understand these types of chronic conditions, which doctors find it very difficult to treat. And at that point, I made a, you know, I'd met so many people who were ill, and I had made a contract with the universe. I said, if I can just get myself better, if I can just get some other people better, I will dedicate the rest of my life to supporting people with unexplained chronic illnesses that are difficult to treat. And so I studied brain neurology, physiology. I managed to get myself 100% better. And then I set up a clinic to treat others. And really, for us, it was important to have the scientific backing. So right from the start, it was, what's the science behind this type of healing? And so we've done medical studies and various things, which I'm sure we'll talk about. So that was my, you know, that was my journey. And it's been a very rewarding and fulfilling journey to, you know, help others through my own experiences that I went through. So it's been very fulfilling.
And you really fulfilled your mission. You said you were going to do it and you did it, which is not what many people can say they have done, which is incredible. In your experience with a virus, I think when my listeners hear the word virus in general, I think we're often thinking about like respiratory illness, or we're thinking about, you know, more acute viruses. For you, an acute virus caused what seemed like a chronic condition. Symptomology wise, what kind of symptoms do the people that you're working with in and originally were working with and currently are working with, how does their chronic illness present from something like either an acute or chronic virus?
There tends to be a broad spectrum of common symptoms that I'm sure, you know, you see in your practice, and a lot of people listening either have or have seen, which are what I call symptoms of a broad spectrum of conditions that I term neuroimmune conditioned syndromes. So neuro, because it involves the nervous system, immuno, because of the immune system, condition, because I believe it's a trained or learned response in the brain and the body, and syndrome, because there's a spectrum of symptoms. So the most common one that we see that seems to overlap with most of them is fatigue and exhaustion. Yeah, that seems to be a very kind of core one in terms of physical symptoms. And then other secondary symptoms like pain, there can be muscle weakness, general feeling of weakness in the body, and then can be respiratory type symptoms as well. And then the cognitive or kind of neurological conditions around difficulty thinking, memory loss, and just generally foggy mind, hazy mind. And then the emotional symptoms, we find a lot of people experience anxiety and depression, those kinds of symptoms overlap. And then spiritually, people find it really difficult to feel that they've got, that they can move forward with their lives, because they're just dealing with this constant battle with this condition. But so there's a whole spectrum of common symptoms, and then each condition will have its very specific manifestations. So for instance, long haul COVID, they will find that in certain the first few months, there's more kind of the immune type symptoms, there'll be more kind of sore throats and things like that. And if we're treating things like MCAS, so mast cell activation or allergy sensitivities, chemical sensitivities, mold, they'll tend to have more of the kind of allergic type responses or mast cell type responses. But they'll have those common suite of symptoms underneath it as well.
Yeah. So I think when it comes to chronic illness, what I hear you saying and what I know your program talks about is that there is the actual thing that happens, right? There's the virus, and then there's really that our body's reaction to what that battle that was waged, essentially. And what you're proposing, and what you've proven, actually, it's not really proposing, is that that reaction and that chronic reaction to whatever had happened can perpetuate itself and build on itself. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I'd love to share the hypothesis in a kind of layman's terms. I think it's really, I constantly find it fascinating, actually, when we're learning about this, is that, you know, the number one question I always ask is, why are we here? Right? And so we can answer that from a philosophical perspective, but from a scientific perspective, we're here because we've been fine-tuned to adapt to this environment. So people don't realize this, but actually this body we've inherited, this brain, has come through all the different aspects of nature. So from those, you know, first plant life, single cell organisms, invertebrates, vertebrates, reptiles, mammals, human beings, our DNA actually contains a lot of those previous manifestations of life. And so I find it fascinating. We share 40% of our DNA with a banana. Which is,
I can feel that totally.
Yeah, I can feel exactly. And cool. So what happens is the system has been refined over millions of years to adapt to our environment to survive. We're survival machines. So the number one priority is that our body wants to survive, procreate, and pass on our genes to the next generation to proliferate. Yeah. And so that's the number one kind of priority. And that's,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And so our bodies care more about survival than they do our well-being. And that's the first clue to these types of conditions. And then what happens is, so I'd love to give an analogy. So I don't know, Michelle, do you watch like Game of Thrones or like fantasy novels? Oh, you do. Okay, there you go. So for those people who don't know Game of Thrones, let's take the analogy of just a fairy tale. So imagine you are Queen Michelle of your kingdom. Right. Wow. And oh, you've got the wave perfected. There we go. You're royalty in a past life, clearly. And imagine that you've got a kingdom and you have an army, which is your nervous system. So that's the nerves that run through your body, information system. And you have a navy, which is your immune system. And then and you know, just like a normal army and navy for any kind of kingdom or country. And normally an invading army comes in. The army and navy are galvanized. They then fight off the invading army and save the kingdom, survival being the biggest priority. Now, imagine in your kingdom, there's a drought. So actually, the kingdom's a little weaker. Yep. And suddenly, and there's an invading army coming over the hill. And so the army and navy are weaker than they would be normally. So they fight off this army, this invading army, but it takes them a lot longer to do that than normal, yeah, which often happens in the run-up to these types of conditions. And so they eventually just about manage to fight off the invading army. But of course, they're scared that there could be future waves of invading armies coming in because they only just managed to survive. So they come to you, the generals of the army and navy, they come to Queen Michelle and they say, what shall we do? Because we only just survived. The kingdom nearly fell. Right, Queen Michelle, we need all of the resources of the kingdom. We need the wheat, the corn, the metal, the water. Everything should be channeled to the army and navy because if we fall, then the whole kingdom falls. Yeah. So you agree, thinking that's a logical step. So now all the resources are going towards the army and navy who are now traumatized. They keep firing off their war machines and their arrows at the slightest provocation. So one person on a horse coming over the hill, quick, fire off the arrows, use up all the resources. And that's what's happening. Our nervous system and immune system are in this chronic overload. They keep overstimulating, which is fine from a defensive perspective because survival is our number one priority. But from the body's perspective, this then has ongoing effects because now the people in the kingdom who are living normally, they aren't getting the resources, yeah, the energy to be able to survive. It's all being channeled to an overactive immune system and nervous system, which is why many of these conditions we see in overactive inflammatory markers, etc. And the way the gut that comes in here as well is that so trying to stretch the analogy, the more we keep firing off those weapons at, the potential of an invading army, the more it actually weakens the gut, yeah, and makes it the gut more sensitive, more reactive, and then causing, you know, IBS symptoms or constipation or a whole host of different things, and also shifting the good and bad bacteria in our gut, all the other things that, you know, we all know as yourselves know as nutritionists. And therefore, this hyper-defensive mode is having all kinds of complex effects on the body. And what is brain retraining? Brain retraining says, okay, this is the way the brain has decided to act based on its survival priority. But actually, we can train it back to homeostasis, back to balance. So brain retraining is those generals coming to you, you know, a few months later and saying, right, Queen Michelle, we still need all of the resources. And you saying, hey, I know that it's been tough. I know that you've only just managed to win the war and you're concerned, but it's okay. The war is over. You can relax. You can let go. Yeah. You can stand down, get back to standby mode. And that is what brain retraining is. It is training. And it's not just a cognitive thing. It's there's certain processes that we do to train the brain again and again and again to be able to switch off these overactive responses and come back to balance so the kingdom can come back to happiness again.
Just loving the Queen Michelle thing. Just have to say that. I'm loving it. I'm from Queens, New York, too. It's really working for me. I have to say, I love this analogy so much. And what I think is so important for people to understand and what I think happens so much with the recent COVID virus and with people's reactions to it is that if you don't kind of crack into the cycle with that limbic retraining, with that neuroplasticity training, it will perpetuate. So it doesn't really like, it's kind of like the body, like you said, went to the queen said, do what you have to do. And the body will continue to stay at that level. Well, this is just a question for you. It could be speculative because you might not have a definitive answer, but do you believe the body will always stay at that level if someone's in that really high response without intervention?
Not always, no. So there's not X plus Y equals Z. It really can be that for whatever reason, the system gradually comes back to balance. And often people have made shifts in their lifestyle. So as an example, absolutely, sometimes people see a nutritionist, they see a naturopath, and they'll shift their diet, they'll make certain changes. And that's enough to persuade the Army and Navy that we're safe now, right? Because some of the downstream effects of that have now been mitigated. Because remember, there's a feedback loop here. So what happens is the brain is stimulating the nervous system and immune system, which is creating the downstream symptoms in the body. Those downstream symptoms then loop back to a hypersensitive brain. The brain thinks we're still in danger, stimulates the nervous system and immune system. So we get caught in that vicious cycle. But that vicious cycle could stop if there was something that someone did strongly enough that alleviated the physical symptoms, where then the brain thinks, oh, maybe we're not in danger anymore because the symptoms have subsided. And that often can be, for instance, many people with these conditions go on a low dairy or no dairy, no gluten type of diet, or they're, you know, encouraged to eat high fiber foods. And all of those things can then support the gut, which then means, you know, the vicious cycles start calming down and someone can get back to health. So we generally tend to treat the people where it hasn't naturally and spontaneously come back to reset, but they need further brain retraining.
I think that there's probably factors that influence it, like your body's, how many resources you had to start with, your body's natural resiliency, how much fuel you have in the tank from an emotional, spiritual perspective. I think all of those things, and also how hard of a hit the virus was. I think all of those things can influence it. It's so important for people to hear your mission and your message, because I think when it's invisible or mysterious chronic illness. Can you think of a more unpleasant term than mysterious chronic illness? I mean, it's like everything everyone would fear. It feels like it's coming out of nowhere and no one knows how to work with it. And I think what felt very perplexing for people, especially, and I keep coming back to in the COVID, you know, with long COVID, it became something that was so, you know, mast cell can produce symptoms in any part of your body because the mast cells live in every tissue of your body. So I think when it feels more predictive and understandable for people, like your approach, I think it's very relaxing. And just for people to know that if this kind of response is happening, like you said, you can intervene from a physical perspective, just even sitting with a practitioner who cares about you, you know, watching one of your videos in the Gupta program, you instantly can be shifting that just from feeling safe. Like that, just that can shift the physical reaction. And that's why it's so lucky that it's a cycle, because you can kind of crack into it any way you need to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that word of safety is so important, that we can feel, emotional safety, which can go up and down. But actually, this is going deep into the unconscious to persuade that at a physical level, that we are safe. And that's where the retraining comes in. And I think it's really important to emphasize that people sometimes think, is this just CBT or cognitive approaches? And it's really emphasizing that this is a brain retraining. It's a brain rehabilitation, almost like when you have a stroke, people then lose control over a limb, for instance, or they find it difficult to walk, and they have to go through rehabilitation through repetitive practices to rewire the brain, to relearn how to do that. And in a similar way, that's what we're doing here, is retraining the brain through repetition.
I think what's so powerful too is that where cognitive behavioral therapy does always take a mental input from people to kind of, this could, like you're saying, this is, you're almost training the organ of the brain as opposed to the thoughts that go into the brain. You're doing both, because I love your program, but I think that that is a missing piece for people, where if they're in that neuroimmune conditioned response and it's constantly happening, the messages they're going to be receiving, even from a cognitive behavioral therapy perspective, are going to be repetitive and unending. So even if they try to kind of convince themselves or train themselves, they might need to crack into it from a quite a, like an organ wide level. I don't know how else to say it, like, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. We give the example of when you're learning to drive a car, on your first lesson of your driving lesson, if you were to sit there and say, well, you know, I'm going to do this really well, and you know, I'm really positive about it, and I'm open to it, I'm letting go of any negative patterns around it, that's all well and good, and that would be beneficial, but it's not the thing that's going to train your brain how to drive that car. Yeah, so that's exactly. That's the difference.
It's like the motor response, almost. Like, that's more what you're training. So in also, I am interested to talk about COVID. I've never talked about COVID on the podcast, you know, so I'm like, ooh, let's talk about it. What do you think made it, because I have so many clients who, and myself included, who never had mast cell issues, never had histamine issues, and just, you know, just the virus itself seems to have activated that. Again, it's a combination of many different factors, like we talked about before. But what do you think was so special about this virus that it created this neuroimmune conditioned response from people?
Yeah, really good question. I think that it is actually quite a intense virus. I mean, I've had COVID myself, and it was different to having a flu or a cold, you know. And I think that for whatever reason, it seems to trigger more inflammatory effects in the post-viral phase. So even once you've fought off the virus, the system is in that overprotection mode. And this isn't without precedent, because actually glandular fever, often known as mono, that actually also has about 10 to 15% of patients who go on to have, you know, certain chronic symptoms for a number of months afterwards, and can be a trigger of chronic fatigue syndrome. So that's an example of another virus that can be quite intense on the body. And so it is with COVID. It seems to have that intensity and trigger these longer term viral responses. Now, the good news is most patients who have the long COVID, within a couple of months, it tends to dissolve away. But then there's around anywhere between 2 to 10%, depending on the studies that you look at, who then go on to having these chronic symptoms for at least 3 months. And we term long COVID being at least 3 months, where it's turned into its own thing now. It's not just a post-viral phase.
And Ashok, I mean, that's our crew. We're the 2 to 10% people. Like, those are the people who are probably coming to me ultimately because they couldn't shake those symptoms. And it's always very interesting to me because, again, it could be a one triggering event or many different ones. I've just found it very odd that I've worked with some clients for like 4 years before COVID, and then their symptoms just completely changed and skyrocketed. And I could literally see them becoming anxious about their symptoms and that reaction starting to form. So I was happy that we were working together at the time, because I was like, we have to crack into this now, before, when you're living with symptoms for 5 years or 10 years or something like that, every time you get a symptom, I'm sure it creates such a huge nervous system response because it's so scary. And you're fighting so hard, it feels like. Tell us about just like the mindset behind having a chronic illness and how this neuroimmune conditioned response can influence just our hope around chronic illness and how we feel about ourselves when we're experiencing chronic illness.
Yeah. So the emotional context is very connected to the physical context. So we know now that the guts and the balance of bacteria can directly impact on anxiety and depression in the mind, or depressive thoughts, and vice versa. And so there's a complex interplay of emotional responses that then occur. And I believe that because of the inflammatory effects, we are going to feel more down, more depressed, harder to lift up our spirit, which can then mean people blame it on our mood or emotions, whereas actually it's not that. Those are downstream effects, the core of it being this overreactivity. And that means that people can lose hope, they can go from doctor to doctor, they're not getting any responses. And then also people who are involved in advocacy, they can feel like, hey, people aren't taking my illness seriously, because a lot of doctors dismiss it. They say it was just, you know, the anxiety around having the COVID pandemic, etc. And that's really unfortunate, because then people feel they're not believed. And then sometimes what happens is they come to brain retraining and they think, oh, this neuroplasticity brain retraining is saying it's in my mind. And we have spent ages just really explaining to people that, no, it's in your physical body, but there are emotional aspects that occur as a result as well. So, yeah, I think the mindset we encourage people to take is, rather than believing the support groups and the doctors in terms of, look, there's no hope, there's nothing we can do. Actually, there are people who are healing every day, whether it's through our program or other things. People do heal from these conditions. And having that mindset of hope and positivity is so important.
Yes. And it's sometimes you have to be a little bit like toxic positivity with yourself and false positivity, because people who have experienced chronic conditions, when they say, hey, if I go on an airplane, I'm going to be flared up and I'm going to feel terrible, they have evidence that they are going to feel terrible when they go on an airplane. So their brains, in this very evolutionary biological way, as you talk about, have proven them, and they're proven to their nervous systems that there is danger, so that it has been proven to them. So I think that you almost have to tell yourself something that hasn't been historically true and then experience it, which I think is very hard for people too, I'm sure.
Yeah. And, I always say anything that's ever been achieved in the world has always been almost a slightly irrational belief and positivity in something happening. Right. So, an entrepreneur might think, well, every investment that I've ever made I've never managed to make anything successful. Now, if he has the belief or she has the belief that anything I then do in the future is never going to work, they'd never get anywhere. But what they have to do is say, okay, those didn't work and I've learned from it, but now I'm open to things shifting and changing and for a different future and a different outcome.
What was that switch for you on your personal journey? Did you say like, hey, this is just not going to be the rest of my life? Like, did you have a moment, or was it just over time?
I think that was more my personality at the time. Was I wasn't prepared to take, no for an answer, or say like, there's no understanding, we don't understand it, and there's nothing we can do. I'm a very, at that time and now, I'm very curious. So for me, there was both a curiosity to say, how can this be unexplained, right? We have to understand this at a deeper level. And at the same time was obviously my personal health, thinking I will do whatever it takes to get my health back.
Absolutely. And I think, again, for some people, if they've been sick for so many years, the hope can degrade, obviously, over time. But I also want to say to anyone listening that there's never a point of no hope. Like, there's just no point too far. There's no exhaustion too much. There's no symptom too great, that there's not a way to move forward. And I think your program really is that for people who have been through so many, even functional medicine doctor's offices, who I love, obviously, and allopathic doctor's offices, and have not received that answer. And sometimes the most painful or dangerous thing that we can hear is that there is no hope. That's almost worse than just trying or experimenting with things, I think. And I know that that's really not the allopathic model, is to like try. It's more about kind of very smartly diagnosing and boxing things so we can understand things better. But I think that it's like scary if someone hears that. And I want people to hear the opposite message too, that I don't believe there's any person who can't, even if the symptom can't necessarily be better, let's say it's an injury or something like that, and it's going to take X amount of time to heal, but our tolerance of the symptom or our experience of the symptom can change always.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really, as you say, understanding that the medical model, the mainstream allopathic model, is coming from a place of reductionism. So we will reduce everything down to its smallest level. And if that is incorrect, then if we fix that, everything else will get better. And if we can't find that one thing that's out of balance, whether it's an enzyme or a hormone or whatever, then that means that this is a mysterious illness, because we haven't figured it out at the micro level, and therefore there's no cure and there's no hope. But that's one model, right, which works very well for infectious diseases, but actually doesn't work for inflammatory diseases or chronic diseases. Actually, you have to look at the whole person. And so many people do heal and they fall off the radar, and no one really knows how they healed or why they healed. And so the people who are left are then there's a selection bias of, oh, those are the people who didn't heal and therefore there's no hope. Whereas really people are healing from these conditions.
Absolutely. And you, I'm sure after this amount, many, many years of you having this program and doing the extensive research you've done, it sounds like, and I would assume, you're more hopeful than ever for all these chronic conditions.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. You know, we're conducting randomized controlled trials, you know, on these different conditions. We're getting great results. We're looking to do larger scale trials and also to improve the program. So our aim is always to make it easier to use, get better outcomes. So that's a project that we're doing as well at the moment. So, yeah, I think the prognosis is good. And I think in 5 to 10 years' time, we will crack this and we will find enough of an evidence base that this type of approach is something we should use right up front. So rather than, you know, other approaches, just starting with brain retraining, I think would be really beneficial.
How do you feel that your program might differ from something like a medical program, even in a functional medicine doctor's office? And I mean, can you also walk us through a little bit of like what the Gupta program is and kind of what the internal pieces of it? I could too, because I love it and have been through it. But I want you to walk us through it a little bit and how it differs from other programs and what it literally is for people too.
Yeah, of course. So the program's online, so that's very useful for patients who are around the world and don't, you know, have the energy to perhaps visit a doctor. And there's video sessions, so interactive video sessions and audios, and then there's weekly webinars with myself. So we handhold people through the whole process. And a lot of functional and integrative doctors are now making it part of their overall program. So they're saying, okay, we are looking at diet, we're looking at medications, and here's an important piece that we'd also love you to do. And many doctors and nutritionists find that they can't even give the supplements or the things they want to because a patient's system is so sensitive. So we're desensitizing that system. And I think a lot of doctors now are more open to this kind of approach. And essentially, our program is split into three areas. We call it the three R's of the program. So imagine that in brain retraining, it's like reconfiguring a river. So imagine you've got a big field and there's a river flowing through this field, or a little stream, and it's weathered a channel through the soil. Yeah. Now, of course, let's say we want to now shift that. We want to retrain the brain, we want to shift that neuronal pathway to a different space. What we'd have to do is dig a different pathway and divert the water to this new flow for the river, new neuronal path. But let's say this ground is really hard and stubborn. It's going to be very difficult to actually change the pathway. So instead, the first step of brain retraining is what we call relaxing the nervous system. That when we have a more relaxed system, it's easier because that softens the soil of the mind and makes it easier to reconfigure the path of the stream. So that's breathing and meditation techniques, relaxation techniques, lifestyle changes, which can all prepare the ground. The core of the program is the retraining of the brain. So those are those interactive brain retraining sessions where we take people through a special 7-step process and little short versions they can do throughout the day. And we train them to recognize the danger signals that occur from the viscera, from the body, and then to recognize them and retrain them regularly and repeatedly to send safety signals back down to the body. And then thirdly is re-engaging with joy, which is realizing that actually sometimes we wait for ourselves to heal before we allow ourselves to be happy and uplifted and positive. But actually, our immune system is more powerful and more centered and calm when we re-engage with joy despite having these symptoms. So it is about finding your joy, finding your purpose. And people find that very beneficial of this overall package of support. But the core of it, obviously, is the unique part is the retraining. And that's how I would describe the program in a nutshell.
Do you think that there are people who, and of course, this is an experience I've had with people who doing just step one, breath work or meditation, that could either be helpful or not helpful to people? Like, can we talk about like meditation as a tool and how it can interact or how people might feel about it if they are in a state of, you know, constant fight or flight and constant nervous system activation? Just that first piece.
The first piece. Yeah. So some people find that actually the meditation is triggering for them because, you know, imagine you've had this buildup of patterns that has occurred within you, this buildup of lack of safety. And then the moment that you meditate, a lot of that is now just coming to the surface. So it can be even more anxiety provoking for certain people. Now, some people are able to run the gauntlet, get through that and be okay. And for others, it's just you know, the meditation isn't right for them initially. So we have other types of visualizations and exercises that they can listen to just calm and relax until they can go to the back to the meditations eventually. And a lot of people use meditation in general and have found it beneficial for these types of illnesses. And I always call it, you know, the wings of a dove. So in all our endeavors as human beings, there is the more Western approach and the more Eastern approach. So the Western approach is more about the cognitive, the thinking aspects. And the Eastern approach has been more about meditation and breathing and calming the mind. And it's when you combine them both that the dove can fly. So this is where relaxing the nervous system is incredibly important. It's finding what works for you to prepare the ground for retraining.
I think where a lot of people get stuck is they get triggered by meditation because, again, it's meditation is a practice and a lot of things are going to come up in stillness, of course. That's where, you know, whatever you were hiding is going to come up, you know, from yourself. Mm. And I think when people are going to either functional medicine doctors or allopathic doctors, that kind of reaction or response they're getting is you got to calm your nervous system down. You have to calm down. But the pathway there is knowing that it might be a little bit triggering and either tolerating it or stepping away from it, finding other pathways to safety. And then I do think it's very important for people to go into that limbic system retraining because it for some people, like you said, it might be enough. For some people, it might be triggering. But I do think that what I really feel separates your program and your research apart is that oftentimes when people are in a state of real long-term chronic illness, they might need that next step.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's actually, I think, vital because what can happen is you can feel calmer temporarily and think, great, I'm calmer, everything's fine. But I'm sure you've seen in your practice as well that when people then go for a life event, a triggering event, high anxiety, a lot of those symptoms can come back because the brain hasn't been fully retrained. And we get a co-wiring effect, which is that the kind of anxiety systems and the emotional systems get tied to the immune systems. So the more anxious we become, the more our immune system actually responds as well. So you have that dual effect going on.
Have you found any sort of, like, to pull in the Eastern and Western again, are there measurable ways to understand how just the Gupta program would compare to just an allopathic intervention when it comes to mast cell or chronic fatigue or anything like that?
We haven't tested that contrast.
People would have to stop doing something that was helping them on either side potentially. So yeah, I get that.
Yeah, absolutely. But we certainly hear the anecdotal feedback that doctors find it useful to have our program as an adjunct to what they're doing. And we haven't kind of separated the two to see what's most beneficial. But as you know, we have conducted randomized controlled trials, for instance, a recent one on long COVID. And that one was compared to a general wellness program, which is what a lot of people get when they have long COVID. They go to a national clinic. And it was found in that 3-month trial that our program was 4 times more effective at reducing fatigue and exhaustion and twice as effective at increasing levels of energy, which was, you know, a great result for, long COVID. And that was a published study just published a few weeks ago. And so the more we do these types of studies, the more that we're developing that evidence base that this is, you know, an effective treatment.
I think it's when I read your anecdotes and your success stories, I think what always stands out very much to me is what people feel like is taken from them very often in chronic illness is this big piece of their identity. Like you said, the fun, their creativity. And I feel like your program is a walk back home to self. Like, I think that we don't know why we don't feel normal. And it's very weird to believe that something like COVID can cause us to feel literally not at home in our bodies and not like ourselves. So I see that in a lot of your testimonials, which really stood out to me, is that people are just, they devoted this time to focus on this so that they ultimately don't have to focus on this. The goal is not for them to be and assume the identity of a chronically ill person, but to return back home to their bodies and to who they are after.
Yes. And many people comment that this isn't, you know, just a brain retraining program for an illness. It's a whole personal development program that enables you to stay well for the rest of your life. And that's what it is. We don't want people just to do something really fast and that's it, but actually to learn from the condition, to get well and stay well. And that's a really important part of the latter half of our program.
Absolutely. Do you find that people will have to go through the program again after, or it feels like they have the tools and they end up just repeating?
I think that it depends. Certain people, as long as they, keep up the techniques in some shape or form. So it's not that you have to do the whole program for the rest of your life, but there are certain aspects of it that are beneficial to keep using. And that can keep someone on the straight and narrow in terms of keeping them well. And then, yes, there are people who will have life events occur and then some of the symptoms will come back, but they know what to do. They come back to the program and treat it like they're going through the program from day one, and then they're able to get their health back as well. So I think it's, we try to be, really realistic that yes, you can get better. Many people just stay well. They never have any symptoms coming back, but let's not be complacent. Let's acknowledge that that could happen and therefore keep a really good, healthy lifestyle.
Absolutely. In ways of speaking to the general public, do you have any tips on coming up on a new COVID season if we're already experiencing chronic illness, whether it be a mindset tip or any sort of just general public tips for as we come up upon another delightful season of COVID?
Yeah, I think the main thing is, first of all, not to be in fear, because when we're in fear, then automatically that drops our nervous system's effectiveness. So not to fear this virus or condition. And I think the next thing is, most importantly for people who've got chronic illness or anyone else, is to take the time to rest when you do have it. So many people, we feel, are getting long COVID because actually they have, not, this is not everybody, but they have COVID and they're getting too fast back to exercise or back to work and pushing themselves. And therefore the body's not ready for that and sees that as a threat. And what's useful is when you have this virus to really take time out from work, from stress, from anything, and enjoy that time to, when I say enjoy, you don't enjoy having an illness, but you can enjoy the rest that comes with it. So just really making sure your body gets back to 95-100% before you get back to work.
This idea of being not well, like you're saying, or living in the state of chronic illness, do you think this is a unique, this is again, very, high level question, but is this a more unique to Western culture because of our, how much we kind of pound our bodies and pound the pavement all the time? Do you think that it's more likely you'll encounter this mindset that needs to be retrained or this body reaction that needs to be retrained?
That's a really good question. I think so. Yes, I think this is, there's higher levels of this in the Western world. And I also think that's partly due to a number of different environmental and toxin factors that we have. So we have food which has more toxins, we have more pollution, etc. Although that's, the East is also catching up on that as well, unfortunately. Yeah. But also, I think there are kind of sometimes higher levels of stress, there's less community support. So community and being in a social environment can be very important. I think we are probably in the West more focused and reliant on our screens, for example. Mm-hmm. And all of these things, it can increase the stress and the tension in the body. We don't take time out to truly relax and be in our bodies. And, so it's not just the West. I think the East is also, those issues are also occurring there as well. So stress just has its different manifestations in different cultures. And I think that's at the core of it.
And I think that's why we saw, and where I feel like a lot of the research around long COVID was focused on more Western countries. And I think it was probably because I can imagine even the idea that if we are unwell, we should continue to get better and question and seek, why are we not well? Why are we not well? Why are we not well? As opposed to trying to sit with, tolerate, explore, or imply that curiosity. I think the initial response is, how do I squash this? How do I make this end? How do I move forward? And I think that even that will lend itself to, like you said, that nervous system response, the immune response, and all of those activations, unfortunately, too.
Yeah, and we call it detective work. It can be very stressful. So we all go into that detective mentality of, right, I've got this, let me search and search and find this and that and the other. And it can be just overwhelming because there's so many potential options. And also then get told by support groups, there's nothing that you can do, and there's a barrage of different messages coming on there. Don't get me wrong, I think support groups are great, and they do offer that helping hand. And at the same time, it is overwhelming with that detective work. And therefore, when people come onto our program, we really encourage them to let go of that detective work and just focus on our program, because otherwise you can be continuously searching and getting stressed out as a result of that.
It is, if you think of your analogy with the Army and the Navy, it is an Army and Navy response, right? That is coming from them still. That is still them wanting to fix, wanting to produce, wanting to do these things. I think what I love seeing, and I know you must see in your program too, with my clients, is when my clients first come to me, they're like, do I need a strict elimination diet right now to get through this? Do I need this? Was it this food that just caused me a stomach flare? And I'm like, you're going to hate me for saying it, but like, let's just ride this out and not place blame on one thing, because then you can become fearful of the symptoms again and become fearful of whatever that food was. Not that I don't think there's a place for like a low histamine diet with these conditions we're talking about or whatever it is, but when we attribute too much to one thing, we then create and activate that limbic system response, our amygdala and all of those things. And we, which is kind of my concern with all these conditions in the world of functional medicine, which I love so much, because I think we still can't fit fear into a protocol for it to be effective.
Yes, yes. And I think something you've highlighted there is we as alternative and complementary practitioners can fall in potentially the same trap as conventional medicine in terms of the reductionist approach, which is, this enzyme is low, that's the cause of your condition, or this food is the cause of your condition, you need to eliminate that. What that creates then, as you say, is this feeling of anxiety that I've got to be super vigilant, because if I don't, then I'm going to be causing my own flares. And then actually that becomes a form of brain retraining, because I believe if we go on a strict elimination diet, which, don't get me wrong, can be beneficial for many people, it can also then potentially create or tell the brain, those foods are dangerous. If you have that, you're going to have a flare, or actually you need to be hyper defensive towards that food. And therefore having a bit of leeway gives people that sense of, okay, it's not about absolute 100%. I can't have this, but it's just radically reducing something. And yeah, we see a lot of people who are in that anxious state because they are trying to, at the very micro level, reduce any contaminants in their food that might have triggered them. And it can be anxiety provoking.
And certainly in a system that is already hyper-reactive, your Army and Navy picture, they are on guard 24 hours a day. The last thing we need to do is, in, like you said, step one is nervous system calming. A lot of people are going to these practitioners with chronic conditions, and the answers they're getting is, we need to cut this out. We need to eat, you know, take 85 supplements. You better get your water clean. You better get everything. And the body is so reactive on a physical level, but the body is so reactive on an emotional level too at that point. So you just have to, in every single way, like, cool the system off. And I know when clients first come to me, they really want me to give them a hardcore meal plan and give them like really hardcore, like, we got to do this and be more militant. And it's almost never helpful, because if you're introducing it, the Army and Navy are going to start shooting the second that they see, you know, they're going to start firing off. So I think I agree with you this is the third time saying, as much as I love functional medicine, we can get caught in that reductionist, you know, allopathic path when we are trying to prescribe solutions without understanding the condition that the body is in. And like you said, people with histamine intolerance, like, you could take a B vitamin supplement and you could be deficient in B vitamins, and you can take a B supplement and it can absolutely totally flare you. So it's not that your body doesn't need it, but your body doesn't understand how to integrate with the environment. So you have to like make that interaction better, which is literally what your brain retraining does.
Yeah, that example there is just the threat perception. When the brain is hypervigilant and the body is hypervigilant, the gut is hypervigilant, any new thing you introduce, even though it could be massively beneficial, the brain's thinking, ooh, could this be dangerous? Let's just err on the side of caution, because we're already weak. Why would we allow ourselves to have something else that could threaten our survival? Yeah, it's in that vulnerable, reactive mode. And until it comes out of that, it will react to all kinds of different things. And it's also asking, why are those things lower? Why is my B lower? Why is my D lower? Why is it? When we overstimulate the nervous system and immune system, we precisely use up a lot of the resources of the body. And therefore, we get low in all of those various things. So we can take supplements, but it's not getting to the root cause of what's causing that in the first place.
You nailed it. And also, this is something that I have so many gripes with, when any practitioners are looking at a stool test and saying, oh, this, right, enzyme is low, calprotectin, and then prescribing, this is why this is happening, and giving the thing that is missing. I'm like, you're missing the scope of the bigger picture of what's going on and what the climate is of the body. So I totally agree. And I think this idea of hypervigilance for people, you know, you know this and I know this, when clients come to us at this point, I can immediately sense the hypervigilance and I know we got to cool the nervous system off, but it's not safe for me to say that and say like, hey, we got to, you know, this is, you're not going to feel a lot better until we do this. So I, sometimes you have to like play a little game with your body and say what feels safe, what doesn't. Would it feel safe to just be too open-ended and just say, go meditate? That wouldn't feel safe either. See what the body wants and reacts to. And just having that practitioner or that program, like the Gupta program, alongside with people is so in and of itself safe and healing. And sometimes just joining or doing something can make all the difference too. So for that reason, I'm so, so grateful for your work and your program. And I just feel, again, like this understood truth of when I've worked with clients and I can sense, okay, they're in the hypervigilance phase, can't give them supplements here. Great, they're in this phase. You just put it to words and science, what is known by many practitioners who feel and empathize with their clients and watch their experience. So thank you so much. If people want to join the program, I'm of course going to put a link in the notes, but tell us, how else can we learn more from you, Ashok, and join the program? Tell us more, how do we access your amazingness?
Thank you. So yeah, we'd love for people to come to our website, which is guptaprogram.com, guptaprogram.com. And there they can take a 28-day free trial, so they can trial out our videos, our audio, see if this is something that's right for them. And as you know, we also have an app as well, so they can go onto the App Store or Play Store, download the app and start using the exercises straight away. And something we're launching very shortly is something called Daily Guptacize, which is a funny title. But essentially, we want it to be a place where the world comes to heal, and it's completely free. So what that is a daily session, a healing session conducted by one of our coaches, which will involve breathing and meditation. And you'll be able to heal in that supportive group, group intention of healing. And that's free to anyone. So they can just download the app, join those sessions each weekday, and, you know, see if that's of benefit. Like, well, that can be of benefit to so many people. And at least you're guided through it versus having to figure it all out each day. So we're really looking forward to launching that.
Oh, that's incredible. And I think, like you said, the one of the most important components of healing is community. And that energetic exchange is going to, you know, shine a light across everyone. So thank you for that. I'm so, so grateful you joined us today. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Quiet the Diet podcast. If you found any of this information relevant or you related to it, please feel free to share the podcast. It would mean the world to us. Also, remember to subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. And you can follow us on Instagram at Quiet the Diet Pod. We'll put the link in the show notes after each episode. Thank you again for listening, and I can't wait to see you in the next episode.